All right, just want to say thank you, or really congratulations, not thank you. I want to say congratulations to all you men out there who graduated from Fight Club this week. It's been a long 10 weeks, but you made it through, and we're excited for you. By the way, if you are a spouse of, or son of, daughter of, aunt, uncle, best friend, whatever, cousin, of a man who made it through Fight Club this go-around with grace, just saying, you should be proud of them, okay? Because it's not an easy thing by any means. And most men, most of us, we strike out. And so that's just how it is. And so congratulate them, you should be proud of them. This year we had 373 guys, it's our biggest yet, start Fight Club and attempt it, which is awesome. And we had 172 graduates, which is the biggest we've ever had. And again, most people drop out, and that's simply because it's hard. It just is. And so if that was you this year, try again next year. We're excited for that already, and can't wait to see how God uses that in our lives. So I'm excited for that. One time, this is a few months ago, I needed to mail something, and so I had a box. I actually just grabbed a random box from my house. I put the thing in there, packed it all real nice, taped it up, all that stuff, labeled it and everything. And I took it to the post office. And when I got there, I waited in line for typical average 35 minutes. You know how that is? Nobody's in a hurry at the post office. And I wait in line. I finally get up to the counter. I set the box on the little scale thing that's there on the counter. And I'm like, I just need to mail this box. And the lady looks at me. And she's behind the counter. She's like, I'm not mailing that box. And I'm like, what? What? Like, is this some sick post office joke? Like, what's the deal here? What's wrong with the box? And she's like, well, I'm not going to mail it because this is a priority mailbox. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. It's just a box to me. And she's like, it's a priority mailbox. And so this box is actually one of our boxes. And I was like, no, you got this wrong. This is my box. This box has been sitting around my house for 2 years. Okay. So, this is my box and I'm just reusing it using it to mail out. In fact, it's almost like I'm really recycling a box, okay? So there's one less box on this earth because I'm using this box. So really, I'm a hero in all the environmentalists and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like I'm just kind of joking around with her, and she was not having any of it. She's like, sir, you're not mailing this box. At least I'm not going to mail this box. And I'm like, listen, this box, and I'm like pointing at it, I'm like hitting it. I'm like, this is my box. Like I own this box. This is my box. And she's like, no, sir. The United States Post Office owns this box. And I'm like, no. This box belongs to me. And she says, if you try to mail this box, all right, this is mail fraud, and that is a federal offense. And I'm like, what? Mailing a used box. And we're going on and on and on. I'm like, no, this box is mine. I could do whatever I want with this box. I could rip this box up. I could throw it away. I could burn the box. I could do whatever I want with this box. And she says, yeah, you could do all those things with this box, except for mail the box. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? So out of principle, as I'm telling her, and I'm like, this is mine. She says, no, it's mine. And out of principle, I took that box home and I wrapped it in paper and I mailed it the next day just to get her, And she'll never know, but that's what I did. And so we spend a lot of our life saying, it's mine, right? We spend a lot of our life pointing at things being like, that's mine, that's my house, that's my chair, that's my seat, that's my ice cream. You don't touch my ice cream, okay? Sometimes I'm at a restaurant with the kids, and once in a while, I'm like, my kids know better. But once in a while, there'll be some little arm will reach over and grab like a fry off my plate. And it's like, whoa, what are you doing? Hey, yo, kid, you back off that fry. You know what I mean? Like, this is mine. In fact, I'm looking over at the whole table. I'm like, all this food is mine. I'm letting you have your little, toasted cheese or whatever. But the rest of this is mine. You don't touch my plate, all right? I don't do well sharing food. I just don't. See, the world tells us you focus on what's yours. The world teaches us, hey, you need to focus on what's yours. You just focus on you. I mean, think about it. How many times have you heard someone say, here in public, and let's be honest, people in this room, we've used this before. Either we post this on Facebook or we tell one of our friends, or it's just kind of our thing in life on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, where we're just like, you know what, your life's not going very good and you got all these problems in your life and you're like, I just kind of need to restart. And you'll hear somebody say something like, I just need to focus on myself right now. As if that's ever the right move. It ain't, by the way. And we look at everything, we're like, that's my money, my time, my career, that's my body, these are my plants. And Jesus comes on the scenes about 2,000 years ago, and he says, actually, everything that you think belongs to you, he says, is mine. See, we left off last week where Jesus has arrived in Jerusalem. It's a Sunday when he arrives, and you got to remember, there's this huge Passover feast, Passover festival that's like going on. And so people, many scholars believe that hundreds of thousands of people from all over the world, Jewish people, would descend upon Jerusalem for this huge festival. And so the streets have swelled with people. And Jesus is there. And then Monday, Jesus wakes up and they head to the temple and he throws out the people who are buying and selling stuff. And he starts throwing tables and chairs and there's animals running around and money flying all over the place. And Jesus makes this big mess and he goes toe to toe with the religious leaders who are the most powerful men in Jerusalem. Big deal. And we left off last week where Matthew tells us that the chief priests and the Pharisees, these are the ultra-religious leaders. These people are the ones who kind of run the whole Judaism, or the kind of the whole religion, especially the Temple Mount where everybody's at. He says, when they heard his parables, when they heard Jesus' stories, they knew he was speaking about them. Of course they did. Everybody knew. The whole crowd of people, I mean, maybe even thousands of people that are listening to Jesus talk out in the streets and out in the courtyard of the temple, they all understood that, oh, Jesus is talking down to the religious leaders, which is something that they had never heard of before. It says, so the religious leaders were looking for a way to arrest him. In fact, they were looking for a way to kill him, but they couldn't arrest him because they feared the crowds. Because the people regarded Jesus as a prophet. See, not only did they just regard Jesus as a prophet, Mark actually tells us as he documents kind of this same time for us in the book of Mark. Mark says that the whole crowd was not just amazed by his miracles. I mean, here's Jesus. He's this guy from the northern region of Galilee. Now he's in Jerusalem. He's been there before. I mean, people have heard about all the miraculous things that Jesus has been doing. I mean, he's healing people. He's fixing people's problems. He's doing stuff that no man, no normal man could ever do. He's doing miraculous things. And so people have heard that, and I'm sure that amazed people, but Mark tells us that people were even more amazed by his teaching, by the things that he was saying. People are even more amazed by the stories that he's telling, and because he's saying things that no one has ever heard anybody say before. And so the religious leaders, they spend all night trying to come up with a way to separate Jesus from the crowd. They need to trap him. They need to get rid of their Jesus problem. And once more, Jesus leaves and he spends the night in a small town called Bethany, which is just on the outskirts of Jerusalem. Now, next morning, it's Tuesday morning at this point, and then remember, Jesus is going to be dead by Friday, okay? On Tuesday morning, Jesus, he comes back to the temple, and the religious leaders had a feeling he'd be back. And the religious leaders, they're ready for him this time. And so they've actually come up with a list of trick questions to trick Jesus and to trap Jesus and hopefully turn the crowd against Jesus. And Jesus responds to them with a story. And it's very similar to what we saw last week. Jesus looks at the crowd and he looks at specifically at the religious leaders who he's talking to. And Jesus says, picture heaven, right? Kind of like this. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear the word banquet, I think of like, you got to dress real nice. You know, everybody's sitting at tables and you're eating like fine food and like that type of thing. This word is actually, think of it a little more rowdy, okay? This word, it's talking about feast or like really a feast coupled with a celebration. Jesus is saying, hey, when you're picturing heaven, he says, picture heaven like a big party. All right, picture heaven like a party, which is kind of funny. Because I grew up in church, like many of you, or maybe some of you didn't grow up in church, but once in a while your grandma would like drag you over to church when you were a kid, that type of thing. And you went to Sunday school and just all the things, and you grew up thinking like, when I die, I'm gonna go to heaven and look at God forever. Like I don't know exactly what I'll be doing there. It's almost like we review heaven as a place that we all want to go to, right? Because the alternative is hell. But for many of us, let's be honest, we're not super excited about getting there, you know? Because it's just like, what are we going to do in heaven? Like, what's there to do? Sounds kind of boring. I mean, heaven, like forever is a long time. Like, it just is. And so we imagine, you know, I don't know if this is from movies or fairy tales or whatever, but it's like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to be up on like, I don't know, a cloud, sitting on clouds, like dressed in a robe. Do we have to learn how to play the harp? Like, is that a thing? I don't know. Or we view it as like eternal choir practice. It's just like, we just singing the whole time. Like, that don't sound fun. And we look at that and we have the image in our mind. We're like, I kind of just rather stay here in Tiffin if that's an option. You know, my life's fine. Sounds better than that. You know, or we view heaven as a place where we worship God forever, which is true. The problem is we view worshiping God as simply singing, you know, or praising him or singing worship songs to him. And so for a lot of us, we view heaven as like, it's like we got two options. We got hell, don't want to go there, or we got an eternal church service. And we're like, I don't know, like that sounds like the same thing, you know, like I don't know. See, but Jesus is saying, no. Heaven's not like that. He's like, you got it all wrong. He says, picture heaven like a party. And so this king, who by the way represents God, you got to understand every time Jesus tells a story or a parable, usually there's someone represents God and someone represents us, okay? So in this story, the king represents the God and those in the, who are invited will represent us. And so here's the king, right? God, he throws this party and when everything is ready, it says he sent his servants to go tell everybody who is invited to the banquet. He's like, go bring them. All right, it's time to go. Like, this is going to be awesome. Let's do this. And so, here's the king. The king invites everyone to come to this huge wedding reception, this huge party. And he sends out the invites and he puts in all the work and he pays for everything and he schedules everything. He's got it all like organized and all scheduled up. Some of you type A people really like that. And he's got it all ready to go. And when it's finally ready, he sends his workers to go get everyone. And he says, send them the message that it's time to party. Like, come on over to my place. I am ready for you. Let's hang out. And so they go. But they didn't want to come. And when the king hears this, he's just like, wait, what? What do you mean they don't want to come? They're like, yeah, we talked to everybody. Like, no, every single person I told, all the invitees, I was like, hey, it's time. And they're like, yeah, I don't really want to go. And he's like, why don't they want to come? And the king's like, give them another chance. Like they are not going to want to miss this. And so, you know, go invite them. Go get them. Go convince them to come to the party. Give them another chance. And so the king sends the workers back out. He says, tell those who are invited, see, check it out. Like, I've prepared my dinner. I got my oxen, my fattened calf that have been slaughtered, meaning they're having steaks, which is great. And he says, and everything is ready. Steaks are on the grill. Coolers are filled with ice and drinks. He's like, you're not going to want to miss this. Come, let's hang out. Let's spend some time together. I am ready for you. Come to the party. He says, but they paid no attention. And they went away, one to his own farm, another to his business. See, everyone got the personal invite. And it's not they could not attend. It's that they would not attend. They all had their excuses. Now, one guy's like, man, I got to work on the farm. I got planning to do. Like, I got to fix this tractor. I got to do this. I got to do that. Somebody else is like, well, I got business I got to get done. I got a call coming up or I got to answer some emails. So I really got to get to that. And then another guy's like, well, I got to go to work. Like, I got work. I'm scheduled to work here. And so it's just everyday life stuff. Like all the things we put before our relationship with God. If you haven't noticed, like our kids, like our career, like our jobs, like our dreams and our goals, like our kids' sports, all the things that come before God in our life is just all everyday life stuff, which, by the way, is so typical and is so sad. What Jesus is pointing at is like he's like, you're being offered eternity with God. You're being offered a relationship with your creator, which you were actually designed and created to have, and you're going to turn it down due to the draw of everyday ordinary things in life? That's it? That's what's going to keep you from there? See, I think many of us, we do this without realizing. We do this. This is us. Okay, there probably isn't anybody in here that's like completely against God. You know what I mean? Like we're all on team God. We all like God. We like the idea of God. Jesus is love and he's loving us. And we all like the idea of heaven somewhat, you know, and it's just like, yeah, we want to go there and all that stuff. And we you know, as we're on team God or we're on his side, we view it like that. But for a lot of us in here, like we have all these things that we put above him. And it's not anything crazy. Like, these guys aren't saying, oh, man, my wife's in the hospital. Like, she's dying. Like, I need to go be with her. No, it's just everyday life stuff that comes before God in our life. And what Jesus is kind of warning us is he's saying that stuff gets in the way between your relationship with me, and that can mess up your eternity. Like, that's an issue. And Jesus says some of those who are invited weren't just like, oh yeah, I hope the party goes well, but I got some stuff, I gotta answer some emails, you know. He says some of them, all right, they were completely resistant. He says they seized his servants and they mistreated him, and some of them they killed. He's like, these people are not just refusing to go to the party, but they're completely resistant to the party. And some of his servants got killed, kind of like what he's probably referring to is like the many Old Testament prophets who were killed by his own people. And so the king, when he hears this and we hears the news of what happens when you know, he gets the report like, hey, you know, that guy's dead. They killed him. They beat him or whatever. He says the king was enraged. This really ticks him off. This is not right. And so he sent out his troops. He killed those murderers and he burned down their city. All right. It kind of tanks fast if you notice that in this story. Like, it's like, whoa, okay. All right, Jesus. But what Jesus is pointing to is he's saying the king brings rightful judgment on these people. That's what he's doing. He's like, the king's not just going to let them get away with this. This is messed up. This is wrong. And so the king brings his judgment on these people. And so the king sees what's going on and he hears about this. And he's like, okay, forget you. This party is for everyone, not just the people that he's talking to, the people that Jesus is talking to as he's telling the story to, the Jewish religious elite people. And so the king, he tells his workers, he says, go and search high and low. Like, invite anybody that you can find. I don't care if they're good. I don't care if they're bad. It doesn't matter. And so the workers go and they gather as many as they can and they make the party full. And so the party ends up being, in the end, a huge success. Everybody's having a good time. And then Jesus adds a twist, which he did so often. He says, when the king came to see the guests, when he came to spend time with the people who were invited, it says, he saw a man there who was not dressed for a wedding. So this guy is dressed kind of in his everyday clothes, all right, like his work clothes. And not only, especially in this culture that Jesus is talking to, not only was that extremely dishonoring to the king or to the host of the party, but this guy thinks, he's like, my everyday clothes, my work clothes, they're good enough. This is not that big of a deal. His issue is he has not submitted himself to the thrower of the party. And he's in his house, at his party. He has not submitted himself to the king. His thing is, I'm good enough, I got this. Now remember who Jesus is talking to. Jesus is talking to the religious leaders who thought that their good rule following was good enough to buy their way into heaven. And that's what they think. I mean, these people were really, really, really good people. They knew their Bible. These were super religious people. By the way, that thinking is exactly what religious people do today. It's the same stuff. That's what most people in our culture think. They think the exact same way. That's what all religions, if you boil them all down together, they all teach the same thing. Hey, you do enough good stuff, God will let you into heaven, it's all good. You got to earn your way there. And Jesus, he came on the scene, and not to start some new religion, Jesus came on the scene to push back against religion. He's like, no. It's not about following a bunch of rules. It's not about doing a bunch of good stuff. It's not what it's about. It's about putting your faith in the king. And so the king confronts the guy. He walks up to him, and the king says, friend, I mean, he cares about him. He's like, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? Dude, what are you wearing? And the man was speechless. He doesn't have an answer. And so the king told his attenders, he says, all right, you forced my hand. He says, tie him up hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness. Jesus is saying that guy gets thrown out of the party, meaning that guy goes to hell. Kind of intense. Now, the religious leaders that Jesus is talking to, they know that Jesus is talking about them. And what Jesus is saying, and this is important for us because this is kind of a big deal, especially for us in our lives, we got to ask ourselves, are we this person? Jesus is saying, you religious people out there, you who are trusting in your rule following and good stuff to make your way to heaven, you think you could buy your way into heaven, but you can't. It doesn't work like that. Why? Because you're not good enough. You're not. And this really ticks the religious leaders off. So it says the Pharisees, those are the religious leaders, they went and they plotted, they planned how to trap him by what he said. They're like, we got to take care of this Jesus guy. Like, he's making us look like fools in front of all of these people. And so they come up with a plan. And their plan was to send their disciples to him. So Luke tells us in his account of what happens here is that these guys purposely pretend to be Jesus followers. Okay, so these guys, they purposely pretend to be fans of Jesus. So they put on their Jesus shirts. I mean, they're singing their Jesus music. I mean, they got their, you know, put on tattoos. Like, they're going up and they're like, hey, Jesus, can you sign this? Hey, can I get this? So, okay, sweet. All right, I'm going to post about you. You know, they're like, these guys are totally faking it, but they act like they're really, really, really a big fan of Jesus. And so they send those guys, Luke actually calls them spies, and along with the Herodians. Now the Herodians are actually pro-Rome Jewish people. Okay, so there's not that many of those people out there. These are actually the exact opposite of the religious leaders. So you got pro-Rome Jewish people, the Herodians. These people are all like, we love Rome, Rome, Rome. He's, you know, like that type of thing. And then over here, you got the religious leaders who are completely against Rome and hate Rome. And like, we want the Jewish people to rule back. Like, we want a Jewish king back. So you got both groups. They're exact opposites. It's kind of like for us, maybe like Republicans and Democrats. You know what I mean? Like, you can't imagine them working together. Like, that's like, what, you know? Or way more extreme than that, it'd be like an Ohio State fan and those losers up north coming together. Like, that would just never happen. It's kind of like that. Both of these groups are threatened by Jesus. So what do? They come together and they send a fake group of Jesus fans to Jesus to ask him, I don't know, an innocent question. Not a big deal, but it's really a trap. And so they come to him. They're like, teacher. And they try to butter him up. You know, oh, Jesus, you're the best. Jesus, we know that you are truthful and you teach truthfully the way of God, all right? Jesus, we know that you speak for God. You're all about truth. We believe everything that you say because you only speak truth and you don't care what anybody thinks, nor do you show partiality. You don't care. If it's hard truth, you say it anyway, all right? That's you, Jesus. We love you. They say, tell us then what you think. We have a question for you. We just want to get your opinion on this. Not a big deal, Jesus, but we'd just like to know, what do you think here? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Ha! Gotcha! What they've done is they've just backed Jesus into a corner. And it's hard maybe for us to understand, so I'll explain this in just a second. Jesus's guys, when they hear this, I mean, his disciples, they're just like, oh no. They didn't ask that question. This was like a political powder keg of like opinion in this crowd. The only way Jesus could get out of this question, at least what his guys are thinking, is like by giving some politician answer. You know what I mean? Where it's like you say a lot of words and you never get around to actually answering the question. That type of thing. And so this is what's going on. All right. Rome ruled for like 1,500 years. That's a long time. Okay. And they ruled from like England all the way down to Egypt. And at one point, they ruled over 25% or around 25% of the world's population. And so how do you control that many people for that long? You put your thumb on them. You take their money. You use it to abuse them even more. That's what you do. And so as you can imagine, paying taxes to Rome is not popular among Jewish people. Right? I don't know about you, but like paying taxes to the government is not popular among the Pinkerton family. It's not, especially at the top, you know, just like, ah, it kills me. Same thing for them. Like we don't like paying taxes in general, right? A few people over here, you guys are all about taxes. Okay, that's cool. All right, fine. All right. But for us, okay, we don't appreciate paying taxes, but at least it's taxes to our own government. You know what I mean? To our own country. Okay, the Jewish people, they had to pay taxes to a foreign government that abused them, that actually did horrific things to them and to their people. And so this was a terrible, terrible thing. And as you can imagine, this was not a popular thing. And the specific tax that is in question here is this tax called the poll tax. And I think it was also called the head tax. Like if you got a head, you're paying the tax. So everybody's got to pay this tax. And now here's the deal. The poll tax was not an expensive tax. It was like one day's wage. That's it. Not that big of a thing. Nobody went in like, oh man, how am I going to pay my poll tax? Like, I don't got the money for that. No, the problem was with what the poll tax represented. It represented Jewish submission to the Roman authority. That's what it represented. It was like recognition of Caesar's rule over the Jewish people. That's what it was. And so it was a tax on non-Roman citizens, like the Jewish people, basically just for the privilege of being ruled by Rome. And so nobody liked it. In fact, a couple decades before, about 20 years before, the Jewish people hated this tax so much that they actually revolted against Rome because of this insignificant small tax. And they lost big time. But that was so important that they were like, we'd rather fight a war, an impossible war against you than pay this tax. And so the question that is brought up before Jesus is, should we pay this tax? And so Jesus is kind of stuck. If he says, yes, pay the tax, well, then he's going to lose the Jewish crowd because the Jewish crowd is completely against paying this tax above all taxes. And then if Jesus says, no, you don't have to pay that tax. Like, that's not right what they're doing with that money. Then he's in trouble with Rome. Remember, who else is there along with these fakers? It's the Herodians, the pro-Rome people. And so Pilate, I'm sure the governor, I'm sure he's got spies everywhere trying to hear the things that Jesus is trying to say. And so for Jesus, this is just a lose-lose situation. So they get him backed into a corner. And Jesus' guys, they can't watch. They're like, oh no, Jesus, don't do it. Get out of there. And the crowd is silent. Everybody's going, that's a good question. I do wonder what his opinion is on that. What's he going to do? He's got to pick one side over the other. Matthew says, perceiving their malicious intent. Jesus knows every heart. He knows every thought, which should kind of freak you out because that includes yours. Should make you think about the things that you think about. He says, Jesus says to him, he said, why are you testing me? You hypocrites. Now, when he says this, the whole crowd would have gasped. They're like, you don't call the religious leaders hypocrites. Like, especially in public, that is messed up. And then Jesus, like, as if ignoring all of that, ignoring everybody's reaction and all the looks, Jesus starts looking in his pockets. He's like, okay, all right, I think I got one somewhere. He's like pulling out his wallet. He's like, dang, shoot, I don't have any cash on me. And so he says, anybody got a coin? Show me a coin used for the tax. Anybody got one of these? It's a denarius, by the way. And apparently one of the religious leaders must have had a coin in their pocket or something because it doesn't take long and somebody, they bring him a denarius. Now, here's what a denarius looked like, okay? This is a denarius from back then. On the front side, on the first side, you got an engraving of the emperor, okay? This emperor right here is Emperor Augustus Tiberius. He's pretty nice guy, a little big of a nose, but, you know, he's all right. And the engraving around it says, Caesar Augustus Tiberius, son of the god Augustus, his dad. And then on the second side, you got Caesar Tiberius. He's sitting on his throne. And then the engraving around that says Pontifex Maximus, meaning the high priest. And so every single one of these coins right here was a reminder to the Jewish people and a reminder to basically everybody throughout the Roman Empire that Caesar is to be one of your gods and he is high priest of all the people. Right? Meaning as you worship all your different gods and all the gods of your ancestors and your families and the new gods you want to worship or whoever, whatever gods you want, just remember that one of the gods that you need to be worshiping alongside of your gods is Caesar, and he's worthy of your worship. And not only that, but he's like so tight and in with the other gods that he's your high priest, meaning he's kind of your mediator between you and the rest of the gods. And so this coin and really the image and the inscription around this coin, I mean, this is just, it's just evil. I mean, everything about this coin is offensive to the Jewish people and God. That's why they hated it so much. And on top of that, think about what's going on. The Jewish people, especially the religious leaders who Jesus is having the showdown with, they're not supposed to have images of fake gods. I mean, especially in the temple courts, which is where the showdown's going on. I mean, think about it. This was one of God's top 10. This was in the Ten Commandments, no images to fake gods. I mean, good Jewish people would never have pictures of fake gods in their house or on the Facebook or on the bumper stickers or whatever. I mean, this is the reason why the religious leaders at the temple didn't accept Roman money in the first place. Remember last week we talked about the money changers as they were exchanging money, and these religious leaders made a rule that you can't, if you're going to give to the temple and you're going to give an offering, like you can't just give Roman money like this. Like that's pagan. And so what they would do is they would exchange that money for their temple money, and that's how you would give it. It's that type of thing. That's what's going on. They hated this, and this was such a big deal, just this little to us insignificant coin, that just 5 years before, Pilate, who was the governor of Judea and around Jerusalem, he actually had banners and flags brought in and kind of paraded through the city with Caesar's image on it. And this, it might be the same exact image that was on the flags. And as he's going around, the Jewish people were very highly offended by this because, again, here's a Roman governor bringing the image of a fake god to their city, and it caused a huge riot. I mean, they were willing to die than have that image in their city. In fact, you know what they did? They, all these Jewish people, they went to Caesar's palace and went to his house, and they all laid down and like showed everybody their necks, like the Romans saying, kill us, we would rather die than have this picture of this fake god flying in our city. In fact, it got so bad that Pilate was forced to remove the flags. Otherwise, he was in danger of a huge riot that didn't look well for him when it came to Caesar. And so Pilate kind of loses publicly. It's embarrassing for him. But here, think about what's going on. See the connection that Jesus is trying to make? The religious leaders are carrying around a picture of Caesar with the inscription of him claiming to be a god in their own pockets. They have one of these in their own pockets, right, at the temple. And Jesus catches them on it. And he's publicly calling out their hypocrisy. And everybody's watching. And so Jesus asks, as he grabs their coin, he's like, look at this. He says, whose image and inscription is this? Whose is this? Right, who's on this coin? And what Jesus does is he puts like the Jesus juke on him, okay, which is what Jesus does so often. And they sheepishly answer. They're like, he's got us. Caesar's. And so it's like Jesus is like, okay, cool, yeah. So let me just get this straight. Like, you guys have an image of a fake god in your pocket at the temple. You should probably give that back to Caesar, don't you think? And he says, give then to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. He's saying, yep. Go ahead, pay your taxes. It's his money anyway. You didn't make that money, it's his money. And maybe even then he points at the religious guy who's standing right in front of him, and he looks him, I would like to think, right in the eye, and he says, and give to God's what is God's. Now, what's Jesus implying here? He's saying, this coin has Caesar's image on it, so give it to him. And you have God's image on you. So give that to him. What is God's? You. See, every single one of us, we're all made in the image of God. That's what God tells us over and over and over again. And the religious leaders, they would have thought back to creation when Jesus says this. I mean, they would have put two and two together. The rest of the crowd, maybe not so religious, like maybe they wouldn't. But the religious leaders, they had like Genesis memorized. And so they know where he's going. And they're like, oh, yeah. God creates everything just using words. All right, remember how that goes? All right, he just speaks. He's just like, earth, earth. I don't know if it sounded like that, but maybe, you know. Or God's like, sun, sun's there. Moon. Moon appears. Land rises up out of the water. You know, he's just creating just by speaking. He doesn't have to do anything. He just speaks it. And he creates the animals that way. He just speaks. And God was creative as he did this. He's like ostrich. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Like, there it is. Like elephant. And the elephant appears. I like that. That's crazy. Okay. All right. You know, butterfly. Like he's creating all these different animals, and he put thought into it, and he was creative with it. But with man, meaning mankind, man, it was different. You know how he creates us? You know how he did it? God of the universe got down in the dirt, and he formed the first man out of that dirt. And he gets face to face with the first man, and it's just a body at this point. And then it says that God breathes life into his lungs. And Adam opens his eyes for the very first time, and he is face to face with the God of the universe. It's the only thing in all of God's creation that is made in his image. God creates Eve as well. And we are the only things in all of creation that are made in his image. Meaning, you know what that means? Hopefully you know this. We are different than your dog. Okay? I'm sure you got a great dog. Maybe. I don't. But I'm sure you do. You know? Or your cat. And I know there's horse people out there. You horse people are the worst, I think. You love your horse. Okay? But let me just say, like, little Fluffy might be your best friend, which is kind of lame. Someone had to say it, but you should know that. And it might be cute and all the things. But you are worth infinitely more to God. Let me put it into context this way. You know that guy at work who you cannot stand? Like, he is such a pain. You know, he's just always there, hovering, whatever. You know, he's just like a total jerk. Or the person who's been the worst to you. Maybe it's a family member, you know, whatever. That you're just like, you cannot stand. In fact, you don't want to say this out loud, but on the inside, you're like on the borderline of hate. Okay, let's just be honest. That guy, God values that guy infinitely more than your little Fluffy, okay? He does. It's worth more, way more. Why? Because we are image bearers, the Bible says. And so many of us, we feel good about ourselves. We follow the rules, and we pay your taxes, and you don't break the law, at least not the important ones. Like, yeah, sometimes you speed and you rip off that tag off your pillow that's illegal for some reason, but you follow the important laws, you know? And you could do all those things in good grades and get the promotion and raise great kids, and you could come here to church and you hear me once in a while call you messed up, jacked up, horrible, terrible people, and you're like, okay, and you just kind of laugh it off, and you're like, well, I'm really not that bad. And you give to Caesar's what's Caesar's, which is great, and you're a good person, and you can live a great life and die and go to hell. That's reality. You know, hell is full of good people by our standards. And the reason why you will go to hell is because you never did that second thing. That's the problem. You never gave to God what belongs to God's. Again, what is God's? Everything. And the only thing that you can really give to him is you. The whole you, by the way. Not just part of you. So many of us, we're sitting in here even, and we're like, man, I love God. I'm on team God. I like God. I like the idea of God. But our lives show that we love other things more. How do I know? I could look at your bank account. I could tell you what you love more. I could look at your screen time. I could tell you what's more important to you than God. And I could look at your schedule, and I could tell you what's most important in your life. See, a lot of us, we don't realize this, but we're distracted by everyday life. We're like the invitees to the wedding. We're distracted just by ordinary life. It's not even like cool stuff. It's just plain stuff. It'd be like this, like if your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever came up to you, and just picture your spouse coming up to you and saying, you know, hey, I just got to come clean. Like I've had an affair, all right, or I've cheated on you. But I just want to let you know I love you the most. That ain't going well. You know what I mean? Like, that ain't good. That ain't good. That's what we do to God. We speak it with our mouths. Yeah, God, I'm all about you. I love you. I love you the most. But our lives, man, our lives don't reflect it. See, our relationship with God should be number one thing in our life. It should be before our job, before our work, before our goals, before our hobbies, before our kids, before our spouse or husband or wife. I mean, it should be number one, and it's exclusive, meaning it affects every other aspect of your life. See, like for me, when I was arguing with that post office lady, right, I was convinced that this box was my box. She was convinced that this box was her box for some reason, okay? But that's really the question that Jesus is forcing on every single one of us. That's the question he's asking. Who owns that coin? Caesar's. Whose image is on that coin? Caesar's. Okay, yeah, right. Cool, cool. Who owns you? Huh? No, no. Whose image is on you? God's. See, we spend our life going, my money, my career, my plans, my body, my future, my family. This is my life. And God says, actually, all that stuff is mine. You belong to me. I made you. I gave you breath. I put my image on you. And so Jesus is saying, yeah, so give to Caesar his little coin. And give to God's what's his. You. See, there's people in this room, you've never done that before. Which is true. All right? I think the best word is surrender. You give your life to him or you surrender your life to him. Some of you guys, you've been coming to church now for a while, and that's good. I'm glad that you're here and you've been learning. All right, that's awesome too. You know more of the Bible. You're learning about the Bible. You're like, oh, I didn't know Jesus actually said that. Okay, Jesus, he ain't sound that bad. Like, you know, that type of thing, which is great. I want you to know more Bible, but more Bible doesn't get you to heaven. Knowing more stuff. I mean, the people that Jesus is talking to, remember, these dudes, they had books of their Bible memorized, and it was like the hardest, most boring ones. Like, it's just true. It's the first ones, like, difficult. They knew their Bibles more than anybody in this room put together. They knew it, yet they're missing it. Why? Because they never gave to God what's God's. They never surrendered their life to him. And again, I know there's people in this room, you've never done that either. And you should do that today. What does that look like? What does that mean? What do I got to do? That's the point. You don't got to do nothing. That's the beauty of it. It's just you surrendering. It's a decision that you make in your mind of like, hey, okay, where am I putting my trust? Am I putting my trust in my so-called good things? And I think I'm a good person and I think that'll be good enough. If my good stuff outweighs my bad, you know, I think I'm all right. Like, do I put my trust in my good stuff or do I put my trust into what Jesus did? Do I put my trust in what I do or what Jesus did? And I'm telling you, put your faith in what Jesus did. He's the only one good enough. You ain't good enough. You're not. Nobody is. And so maybe today you just need to go tell him that. Like, spend some time, just not between you and anybody else, just between you and God, where you go on a drive, take a walk. It's nice outside today. You know, spend some time just with him. Sit on your back porch and just talk to him. You don't have to talk out loud. He knows your every thought. And just invite him into your life. Or why don't you tell him, I give you my life. Why don't you just give it to him? You ain't gonna be perfect. But it's not about that. It's about putting your faith in what he did. So you should do that today. If you've never done that before. See, here on this day, what was designed as a trick question, what was designed as a lose-lose situation, Jesus has completely turned upside down. And it says, when they heard this, everybody was amazed. I mean, the crowd's going, whoa, he's good. He's good. The disciples, I mean, they're standing there like, oh, I knew he got it. Good one, Jesus. That was great, okay? He got his way out of that. That was crazy. And the religious leaders, the Bible says, they're speechless. Like, they're just like, they got nothing to say. And so they left him and then went away. Not that they're ready to give up. All right, they got more questions. They're going to come at him later. But no one can deny the truth in what Jesus says. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for these words, and thank you for teaching us not only about what heaven's like, but teaching us how to get there. See, for so many people in our lives, like even people, even a handful of people in this room, is like we've never given to God what is God's. In fact, we view half the stuff that we have as not as God's, but as our stuff. We view our life as our life, but really you're like, no, 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 think deeper than that, all right? Think big picture. No, we belong to you. But so many of us, we withhold ourselves from you, which is so messed up. God, we ask that if there's anybody in this room that they haven't surrendered their life to you, that they would do that today, because you don't guarantee us tomorrow. You don't owe us tomorrow. We get that taken care of once and for all. God, we thank you for everything. We thank you for just giving us the opportunity and the chance to have a real, true relationship with you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.